And move on to the next case, McDade versus the City of Chicago. Mr. Robinson.
May it please the court, I'm Darrell Robinson for the appellant for a case here on appeal from the Northern District of Illinois, Judge Elaine Buckler presiding. There's one primary issue here at court on appeal, and that's whether or not there was a genuine issue of material fact existed as to whether the defendants had probable cause to detain an arrested plaintiff for felony possession and felony possession with intent to distribute over 200 grams of cannabis. It is the appellant's position that the district court erred greatly in granting summary judgments to the appellees. And in doing so, the district court ignored substantial evidence by way of testimony of at least seven occurrence witnesses, not to mention the contradiction of testimony by the defendant itself. For example, at the preliminary hearing, the defendant testified during direct examination that he noticed Cortez Hassel approach the plaintiff and pass currency to the plaintiff, but that the plaintiff went to the side of the building, reached down, picked something up, and came back and gave it to Cortez Hassel. On cross-examination, at the same preliminary hearing, he testified that no, the plaintiff did not go to the side of the building, he went inside the building. However, at trial, when questioned on cross-examination after those two separate lines of testimony, he testified that no, I didn't make those statements at all. It must have been a typo. The court reporter took it down wrong. And then again, by way of affidavit, he testified that he saw Cortez Hassel approach the plaintiff with the bag and what he suspected a drug transaction take place. It is the appellant's
position. Well, the drugs were found, right? At least the 2 ounces.
The 1.1 gram was found.
2 grams.
Yes, it was found.
Okay. That was found approximate to the two people who were supposedly doing this transaction.
Yes, when Cortez Hassel attempted to lay on the ground. Yes,
so if nothing else, you have some probable cause that some drug transaction went on.
For a misdemeanor, yes it is.
Okay, but nevertheless, that's probable cause.
Based upon those facts alone as testified by the officer, yes, not taking into consideration the witness's testimony.
I assume you're making the distinction between whatever, I hope you are, to make a probable cause for that versus a long period of detention for a much larger quantity.
Yes, I am making a distinction for that, Judge. Yes, I am. But as was also testified to by the witnesses in terms of the 200 grams of cocaine, substantial testimony, I might add, that the officers went into the home. And in the home, they asked the question of whether or not there were drugs in the home. They questioned the individuals in the home as to why a door off the living room was closed and went in there and came out with a box of cannabis. And as they did so, they came down the stairs and informed the defendant, I got a case. This is going with you now. Excuse me, the plaintiff. This is going with you now. What reasonable officer to believe that, in fact, the plaintiff had any association with that cannabis at all? And in district court opinion, it also attempts to use a decision handed down by this court in U.S. versus Mansfield to establish probable cause. And by asserting that the individual who chose to sit in a car in the middle of a parking lot on a snowy, freezy night aroused suspicions that crime was afoot. That case is not analogous to the case at hand, and that was not the decision handed down by this court. This court looked at the totality of the circumstances. One, that the collaboration of the anonymous tip, that the individual was a male Hispanic, two, that he was sitting in a blue Mercedes, and three, that he possessed a gun. In addition to that, when the officers arrived on the scene, three individuals in the vehicle got out of the car and walked in three different directions. On top of that, they were sitting in the middle of a parking lot at 1:30 at night. As testified by these individuals, there wasn't any drug activity going on at all. As a matter of fact, five of the individuals were standing in front of a home 15 to 20 minutes before the plaintiff arrived. In addition, the individuals testified that they were standing in front of a home having casual conversation like they had done many times in the past. How would that be unusual? How would that...
Was any connection made to Mr. McDade and the home that was entered where the marijuana was found?
He did testify that, in fact, he had two relatives live at the home. On the second floor of the home. But the officers weren't aware of that. That was testimony given.
I know, but where was the marijuana found?
The marijuana was found on the first floor in a locked bedroom off the living room. That's where the marijuana was found.
And who had the lock?
A brother of the owner of the home, or at least the leaseholder of the home.
Was?
He allowed the police officer to enter the home.
Yeah. What was the connection to Mr. McDade?
There was no connection to Mr. McDade at all. There was no connection to Mr. McDade at all. The officer never testified that they saw him. Well, he did testify that he saw him go in the building. He changed that testimony at trial and said, no, I didn't make those statements at all.
Who was handcuffed to the outside of the building?
Ramon McDade was handcuffed to the porch, and Cortez Haskell was also handcuffed to the porch.
And they were, before that, outside and then handcuffed to the porch?
Well, they were handcuffed to the porch.
Yeah, right after this discovery of this one point, whatever.
Yes, they were handcuffed to the porch prior to. Well, the 1.1 grams were found prior to them being handcuffed to the porch. The majority of the cannabis came out of the house after they were handcuffed to the porch.
Were they still handcuffed in the porch to the porch while the others, were, the police were inside?
Yes, they were at that time. They were handcuffed to the porch. And the police went and asked the homeowner whether, in fact, they had recognized Ramon McDade. And they said, yes, they do know him.
They were related?
No, they were not related, not the homeowner.
Oh. The ones on the second floor were related.
They were related. They were a niece and a nephew of Ramon McDade. It is the appellant's position that this case is more analogous to U.S. versus Parker, and this court also handed down a ruling in that particular case, and in doing so, distinguished between Mathis and Parker. In that case, there was an anonymous tip that there were four African-Americans sitting in a pink Cadillac, period. This court testified that that was not enough evidence for a reasonable officer to believe that crime was afoot. In addition, in distinguishing Parker versus Mathis, this court held that when the officers arrived on the scene, that these individuals didn't attempt to run or elude the officers, that the officers didn't notice that one of the individuals had a gun until they were ordered out of the car. This case is analogous because, as testified unanimously by all the witnesses, they noticed the officers walking down 119th behind a friend that they recognized to be Zachary Wright. And as the officers got closer to them, came across the street, announced their office, and said, you're under arrest. Based on this unanimous testimony, there is no way that the officers could have set up surveillance. And let's look at their testimony that they set up surveillance.
You're still on probable cause now, right?
Pardon me? Yes, you're talking about probable cause. At the trial, they testified that they were on 118th and LaSalle. Then they said on 118th and Perry. Even if, in fact, they had gotten the street wrong, they testified that they set up surveillance directly across the street from where these six individuals were standing. But no one seemed to have saw that because they hadn't set up surveillance at all. Thank you, Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Robinson. Ms. Zreshny?
May it please the court, good morning. The officer's account of what they saw Mr. McDade do, if credited, supplied reasonable suspicion to stop Mr. McDade and probable cause to arrest him thereafter. They testified that they observed what appeared to be an exchange between Mr. McDade and Mr. Hassel, and as they conducted a Terry stop, Mr. Hassel dropped the bag of marijuana right at the officer's feet. This morning, I will explain why Mr. McDade's submission in response to our motion for summary judgment failed to raise any genuine issue of material fact on the existence of reasonable suspicion or probable cause, and why the existence of probable cause disposes of McDade's federal constitutional claims and his state tort law claims as well.
Will you make any distinction between the marijuana found inside the house versus what was found next to the transaction?
Your Honor, because there was reasonable suspicion and probable cause to stop and thereafter arrest McDade for the transaction with Hassel of the small bag, the arrest comported with the Fourth Amendment, regardless of any dispute about this larger amount of marijuana.
But he has a lot of claims, like malicious prosecution and emotional distress and that sort of thing, which I assume includes a 10-month in prison. And the only probable cause for the rest is it's around this misdemeanor.
That is true as this case comes before the court. I can address both of those, the state law tort claims that you just raised. The critical defect in the intentional infliction of emotional distress claim is that McDade has not adduce any evidence in this record that he suffered the kind of extraordinary severe emotional distress that Illinois requires in order to find intentional infliction. And as to the malicious prosecution claim, there is no authority for the proposition that a malicious prosecution claim is available when at least one charge that does go to trial is supported by probable cause. Certainly, just to go back to the emotional distress, Mr. McDade has made no effort whatsoever to make any argument or adduce any evidence linking any particular distress to the felony charge in particular.
Well, you did. For instance, in footnote 14 on page 33 of your brief, you referred to something that said, nevertheless, the availability of a malicious prosecution tort remedy under Illinois law supplies all the process that's constitutionally due,
mm-hmm.
which is true, and there's not such a thing as a malicious prosecution under the Fourth Amendment, so it has to be a state action. Where I'm having the problem, I guess, is that if had this, let's just say it's just a misdemeanor, is it really reasonable to think that this person is going to be in prison, pretrial detainee, for 10 months before trial for that misdemeanor?
Well, certainly, Your Honor, there's no evidence in the record regarding how long anybody is held pretrial detainee, whether it's a misdemeanor or a felony. He may well have been able to adduce such evidence, but he didn't.
Well, he might have pleaded and got off on probation. There are all sorts of things that could have happened, but with 260 grams or whatever it was, I remember the number, 262 or something, that's a much more serious charge, and he stayed in prison as a pretrial detainee before he went to trial and was acquitted.
Well, certainly, if there was probable cause on the misdemeanor, which there was, he was entitled. He was entitled to be held.
Was he in Cook County Jail?
Yes, I believe that's correct. Yes. Because Mr. McDade's testimony doesn't supply any specific facts to contradict or specific facts to create a genuine issue for trial, there was probable cause to arrest Mr. McDade. the totality of Mr. McDade's testimony regarding the incident is referring to Mr. Hassel. Mr. McDade testified he had a bag in his hand the same time he was walking past me. And that's when they ran up, told us to get down to the ground, pulled their guns up. This doesn't refer to any specific facts that would demonstrate that no reasonable officer could have interpreted what took place as an exchange. And McDade was required to adduce such evidence making clear that his account was inconsistent with the officers or irreconcilable, and he did not do that. And once there was probable cause on this transaction with Hassel, regardless of any dispute about the larger amount of marijuana, it was appropriate to take Mr. McDade's trial on the smaller amount, which it was part of the whole. It was tried as one endeavor. And there is no availability of a malicious prosecution claim. And finally, just to go back.
You can't divide them then. They're so inextricably intertwined that this misdemeanor can carry the whole question of whether or not this marijuana was even connected, this box that they found, and the fact that he was detained in prison, in jail for 10 months. And there's there's a lot of questions about whether the officers testified truthfully. There doesn't seem to be any connection made to why it was presumed that that big box that they found in the locked room in the house had any connection with the one dropped in the street.
Well, I certainly should point out, Your Honor, that we understand we have to take Mr. McDade's version as true for present purposes, but of course the officers, it's not their version that they went inside the house into a locked room.
So none of that happened. What was their testimony? Where was the marijuana
found?
That
it was outside the house under a stairwell adjacent to the house.
It wasn't in the house.
No, and that McDade was going back and forth to the stairwell and taking it and then selling it to people on the street, including
Is that a question of disputed fact somewhere?
Well, as I said before, there may be, as this case comes before the court, there may well be disputes about the larger amount, but what there is no dispute about, there's no controverting evidence, is the smaller transaction, the actual snapshot, the transaction between McDade and Hassel that was supported by probable cause. And one other point to add regarding the, Your Honor mentioned that there was a question about false testimony. McDade has not parsed that out whatsoever, and in fact, he has not made any clear argument why or how anything the officer said was false, and in fact, the testimony preliminary hearing is not even in the record. And just one final point, just to cover the assault and battery claim, the remaining claim, that claim, the testimony does not support that claim either because it doesn't describe anything that would be a willful and wanton use of excessive force under Illinois law to effect an arrest. If there are no further questions, we ask the judgment be affirmed.
Okay, thanks. Thank you very much, Ms. Chesney. Mr. Robinson, how much time does he have? 3 minutes?
First of all, of course, the testimony of the preliminary hearing is in the record. It is encompassed within the trial transcript that was supplied with the plaintiff's response to the defendant's motion for summary judgment. And it again, based upon the testimony, unanimous testimony of all the witnesses, as well as the contradictory set of testimony by the officer, that creates a genuine issue of material fact. The appellant's position is how could the district court establish that, in fact, he had reason to believe that crime was afoot when the officer himself didn't have any credibility, not even looking at the testimony of 8 to 9 witnesses. The officer had testified as the 4 different things had taken place. He testified initially he saw the defendant go to the side of the building, then inside the building. To deny it, he made those statements altogether. And in his affidavit, he never mentioned or make a reference to whether the individual went to the building or the side of the building. He makes reference only to the bag. Now, an affidavit submitted for purposes of summary judgment. And that's important because his reference to the bag is, well, maybe the 200 grams of drugs was in the bag. But the problem with that is that Gramar McDade was charged with felony possession and felony possession with intent to distribute, not Cortez Hassel. In addition, during trial, the officer testified that the bag that fell to the ground was 1 inch by 1 inch and contained about 1.1 gram of cannabis. The bag that the witnesses testified that Cortez Hassel was a bag from the corner store. Even when Cortez Hassel dropped that one inch bag, he informed the officer immediately that, no, I bought this before I came here. That's a statement against his penal interest.
How were the drugs in the box or bag or whatever it was packaged?
Well, according to the witnesses, they noticed that the box with the drugs, the bags in the box at the station, and they were packaged in big bags, and the officers began to take them out.
They weren't broken down into little things like the one they found on the street?
Not according to the witnesses. Judge Kelly doesn't have any further arguments.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Ms. Stresney. Next case for argument, United States.